You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Folks, Mother's Day is around the corner, and let me talk to you about 1-800-Flowers. I can't wait. Every year, it's a tradition. I send stuff to my mother, my mother-in-law, and my wife because they are three amazing moms. They're better than all your moms out there. You think you have good moms? No, I have good moms in my life. I'm just kidding. This was a little harsh. I'm sure you guys all have good moms too. From your mom to the mother of your children and all the moms in between, this Mother's Day, give back to the ones that have given you everything. 1-800-Flowers helps you celebrate all amazing moms, from homemade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts, ordered easily and delivered fresh. For a limited time, you can save up to 40% off Mother's Day bestsellers at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan. Don't wait. Order today and save up to 40% at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Do the women talk more trash than the men? Cameron Brink walked off the court after fouling out yesterday for Stanford and just said bleep you to the referee while walking off the court. And I have to admit, I'm a newcomer to all of this, and so I don't know if I'm asking an ignorant question or not when I ask, do the women talk more trash than the men do?
In my very small sample of attending most of the Miami women's basketball games and the men's basketball games, I would say probably a little bit more in the men's game. Physicality more on the women's side, but in terms of trash talking, I haven't seen it outsized in the women's game all that much.
I never even thought about that until the previous championship game with LSU and Iowa, where there seemed to be a lot of trash talking on both sides. Maybe particularly from LSU, although I'm not sure about that. Before that, it hadn't even occurred to me that, wow, women, do they trash talk more than men? I hadn't even thought about it. But I think there's a strong likelihood of it.
I don't think of trash talking with the college men's game, because I think of the coaches largely being able, until recently, they had so much power over the players that could be viewed as a lack of discipline. Not every coach was going to encourage that, support that, or want that. Some of them would eradicate it. And
at least three times this season, I yelled at an opposing coach to get one of their players in line. Oh, Virginia Tech, they annoyed me. Last year, Louisville, the kid ended up going to Arkansas, who spent a lot of money in the NIL market and ended up having a losing year. But these kids would go down the court and have a go at Coach L. Really ticked me off.
Really? Oh,
what would they say? Pitbulls everywhere, man.
Like, what would they say? Was it gestures?
They would gesture in the direction of Coach L. Imagine. What has he done? He's a sweet old man.
He is a sweet old man.
He's not going at you.
Picturing an indignant Mike Ryan in row three. Like,
don't do that to my coach.
On behalf of his coach, Coach Grandpa. Come on.
Yeah. I love doing that there because they hear you. They definitely hear you.
And yelling at the other coach, hey, get him in line!
Yeah. Hey, sit up! I've talked to opposing fans at the women's games across the aisle. I'm like,
put it on the poll, please. Are you someone who taunts opposing fans at sporting events? Yes or no? I want to circle back for a second to this Kim Mulkey story, because I remember actually a conversation with a journalist friend of mine, had to be close to 20 years ago, where I was explaining to him that the things that he and I care about are dying or dead in journalism, that people don't care about the stuff that goes into how a Kim Mulkey story gets reported. So I will tell you, because I'm guessing that most people listening to this, when Kim Mulkey comes out and says, they gave me till Thursday to respond and sent me the questions on Tuesday, the big stuff gets lawyered. the big stuff where you have to make accusations that are dangerous because a Kim Mulkey might sue you, that's not something that's done hour to hour or even day to day. You have this. If they were trying to get her for 2 years and have finally nailed stuff down and are saying you have 2 days to respond, it's because they've gone through a vigorous amount of vetting on the questions that they have and how they're going to ask them. Now, I understand that Kim Mulkey is presenting to the audience the viewpoint of hit piece, somebody just write something. And what happens when journalism is aspiring to do something that is fair, that is objective, that is fact-based, and it gets torn apart by both skepticism that exists before you even arrive at the story, but someone who can then go with the megaphone to the ignorant. And I'm not calling the supporters of Mulkey or Trump here ignorant, but I am saying where people yell fake news to undercut this. On one side, the reason this isn't a fair fight is because you've got somebody aspiring to objectivity and fairness, and the other person's just fighting with brass knuckles and doesn't care and can yell to the screaming crowd, see fake news here, they're not. So one side is trying to fight fair and the other side undermines it by not caring about fighting fair, by just shouting to everyone, this is wrong, it's just a hit piece. It, as if someone's just sitting down at a computer and typing something up that day to get Kim Mulkey. These things are thoroughly reported. Billy made fun of, was this person working on anything else for 2 years? Oftentimes not. There are fewer and fewer papers that can do the kind of work like that. That kind of work loses to fake news and somebody just shouting to create the unrest around America's general distrust of the news. And it's really sad to see because journalism can't win that fight. Like, this story will be fair and vetted. And when it comes out, you can rest assured she will not be able to sue them. She will threaten to sue them. She will make a lot of noise around suing them. But I assure you that the best lawyers in journalism for the Washington Post will make it so that that story is unassailable ethically and legally, and that it takes a great deal of care to get it in that position. And I just find it debilitating that someone like Kim Mulkey can undercut that with writing down some words on a piece of paper for you know, when she's done an hour's worth of work on rebuttal and 2 years worth of work have been done on talking to reluctant people and finding people who are scared to talk and making sure that anonymous sources can be supported by multiple sources that aren't anonymous, so that anything that is put in front of a lawyer can make sure that it passes the muster of a courtroom. Because if you do Kim Mulkey wrong here after the noise, she will have a lot of your money. And you will have a giant problem. These things are not done carelessly. The responses, though, that undercut them are allowed to be done carelessly and often win because people just don't care how meticulous journalists have to be about writing something like this that Kim Mulkey is afraid of and should be afraid of.
Especially the history of this particular publication, which took down a sitting president. Like the Washington Post, yeah. I think they know what they're doing.
Well, churches throughout the land, a number of different entities like this. There are only a couple of newspapers that can do it this way anymore. Only a couple, maybe just two.
Yeah, well, that's another aspect of the story is that, you know, who owns the Washington Post? Jeff Bezos went into it and everyone had this concern like, oh, they're going to get away from investigative journalism. And to be fair, we also don't know what stories, if any, the Bezos ownership has and that conflict has presented itself, because if it doesn't get out, then it doesn't get out and we're none the wiser. But they have really prioritized investigative journalism in ways that no one else in this nation has. But the reason why Kim Mulkey did that and said this is why people don't trust media and journalists, that is, if we could identify her saying that, is exactly why. Because that is a page out of the playbook. You just deny and you discredit the media as a whole, because as a singular amorphous entity, it's already a super divisive thing, and oftentimes they will threaten litigation. Sometimes they will even go through with the litigation, and it doesn't matter what happens after that, as we've seen. Dave Portnoy, he threatened lawsuits citing defamation. The case gets thrown out. you don't really hear about it anymore. The person that feels wrong still gets to maintain their innocence, and you don't care about the result. It's how Donald Trump gets to try all these court cases, lose, and continues pushing on with the big lie that the election was stolen from him. It doesn't actually matter, the result. All that matters is you appear like you have been wronged, and the people that have already made up their mind about the media will follow you.
Kim Mulkey is on the offensive here with angry bravado, and behind that, it's pretty clear that you hear the desperation. She's scared that whatever the truth is going to come out, and it's going to be backed up by 2 years of reporting and vetting by some of the best journalism lawyers, like you mentioned. She's scared right now, and so she's going on the offensive.
Do you guys understand what I'm saying, though? When we've seen over the last few years, right, that some of these arguments feel super dishonest because we are arguing about things that are supposed to be facts, and the facts don't end up mattering. But if you compound that by making this fight about one side has to do it rigorously and ethically, and the other side is backed by a country that doesn't believe that those things need to be done rigorously and ethically, you get into a problem where the careful lose every fight to the careless because the weights are tilted in this. You can't win a fight if you have to follow all the rules and someone else is allowed to bite you. Didn't a UFC fighter get thrown out of the sport this weekend because he bit somebody?
It's why that's probably the move these days. I think coming out in front of it and already just casting this scrutiny over a piece that you haven't seen yet is not something that
we often see. Oh, but she saw the questions. She saw the questions.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no doubt. But that's why going public.
She knows what's coming.
Yeah, but that's why going public. Well, she knows of some of the things, especially she can probably deduce that by who they're talking to and some of the questions that she's fielded. I don't think that she knows every aspect of this, but what she did, I think, is in today's day and age the right move.
I one of the words she used that really interested me was embellishment. Okay, when you accuse somebody of anticipated embellishment, what you're saying is there is truth there, but he's exaggerating it. I think she knows that some bad truth about her is going to come out, so she's taking the offensive to use words like embellishment.
And already put in her spin, which is the people that they're talking to that actually cooperated with this and didn't rebuff those advances, she framed them as people that already have axes to grind. So you add that other dash of skepticism and what you're coming out to see, and when the story does inevitably drop. And Kim Mulkey, I think that's a big fat mission accomplished for her.
And she's giving the Washington Post the best possible publicity by going on the offensive with this.
Not the best possible. Better would have been if she had dressed the way she normally does with two ducks on her shoulders.
Or if she said it's all true what they wrote. That would give pretty good publicity.
Read the actual story.
Can you let me finish the duck joke before?
No.
Reset it.
I thought
it was butterflies on her jacket.
No, two actual ducks, mallards, on her on her shoulders.
I mean, that was a good joke. But in fairness, that sounds like embellishment, and we're here talking about not embellishing things, Dan. I mean, you're not doing service to this argument.
I would have been. Is it embellishment?
It's a disservice.
Would you be totally surprised if she had a couple of geese on her shoulders when she appeared the next time.
Geese or duck? Which is it? I'll go.
I've ended the last two segments screaming.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Lebatard.
Greg Cody of the Miami Herald. He's actively playing defense against my ability to do the show because what are you laughing at? You're just laughing at
Honey Boo Boo is embroiled in controversy. It's funny to me. Sorry.
Stugatz.
He couldn't stop laughing just looking at the picture of Honey Boo Boo. That doesn't sound healthy. It's a his laughter.
We are fantastic.
We can't make him laugh like that. It's how he's going to die. Right here, just laughing and coughing.
I want to die like that.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
I know many of you have made a lot of fun of me and the national media in general for how we started the last college football season celebrating Deion Sanders, and then all they did the rest of the season was lose. And Colorado has sent out a bunch of numbers about how he has helped admissions, how in general he's brought a great deal of money to Colorado that football brings when football is relevant. And now, when college football becomes more mercenary than it's ever been, more overtly business than it's ever been, he is shaking at the constructs of everything by going on a podcast and saying that his son Shador, that he's going to be a top four pick, and Travis Hunter is going to be a top four pick, and he's saying that he's going to Eli the situation, that there are certain teams they will not play for. That, and I said, when I say top four, he's not saying four rounds. He's saying the first four picks. And Deion Sanders is going to be dad who isn't going to allow the business to control where his son goes. He's going to be Archie Manning. Archie Manning made this mess with Eli. Eli didn't want to go to San Diego, wanted to play in New York. Archie Manning's motives were very simple. Archie Manning was great at quarterback and played for a bunch of losing teams and didn't want his sons beat up by bad organizations. And so he simply wouldn't allow his son Eli Manning to play for the Chargers. And Deion's going to do the same thing with his son.
And Travis Hunter, which is also a very curious setup that they have, gives you insight into the type of relationship he has with Travis Hunter, because he is treated like he's a son and he's giving voice to that.
But not only is he treated like a son, you guys have to understand that one of the master businessmen in the history of athletes making money in sports has two chips and isn't going to do the NFL the way everyone else does the NFL. How do you imagine it's going to go? Because it was one thing when Caleb Williams' dad is testing the confines of the freedom, saying, well, wait a minute, I don't understand the rookie scale. Why can't my son have partial ownership in the team? Why are there all these rules? If you make the finances start in college and you start giving the players power, you realize they're going to start shaking the entirety of the system if they're good enough to do it.
But also, we'll see, right? Like, Eli was the number one pick and was still drafted number one, and then they had kind of like their tantrum, and then they eventually got what they wanted. He's saying Shador is going to be a top four pick, but he still has to play next season and be a top four pick. And then also, like, if you don't like him at number four, where the money's like $36.9 million, you like him at number 23, are you going to sign for $14.9 and cost him $20 million to prove a point?
You're absolutely right, but we'll see is a lot less fun than thinking of Deion trying to do what Caleb Williams' dad was doing to the NFL, because it won't be as quiet. It won't be as shadows. It won't be as leaked reports over here say that they think Caleb Williams' dad is a problem. Deion's not going to back down from that.
I don't know if it's been reported, but I can tell you Caleb Williams was, as you can probably gather from some of his public comments, Caleb Williams was exploring every single possible option. I know he was getting plenty of advice and was really considering entering the supplemental draft potentially. And even he kind of succumbed to the fact that, yeah, you're going to go to Chicago. So we haven't really seen someone that isn't considered a consensus top three pick flex in this way without baseball or something else to leverage. Kyler Murray did so. John Elway did so famously. They had their options.
So right now, in a different sport, we're seeing LeBron James thinking that Bronny James is a lot better than scouts seem to think Bronny James is, particularly when you factor in the cardiac concern.
He has backed off that a little bit.
Okay, so it's not the least bit surprising that Deion Sanders would do what he's doing or think the world of his son, but I really do have to know that his son is a top four pick because I haven't heard that. Now,
he's projected.
His son's good, man.
He's projected. I see a mock draft for 2025 where he's the first pick.
Yeah, he's up there. And okay. Travis Hunter, like, it's not outside the realm of possibility, especially if they put together a good year, that they're both top five picks.
Big variable, though.
Okay, but we can, again.
More power to him. More power to Deion Sanders.
Careful with that.
For trying to take control.
No, but careful. More power to Deion Sanders. Be careful. With how much power you give Deion Sanders because it's, look, what you and Billy are saying is absolutely fair. It's also not interesting to think of them not being able to challenge the system. But Deion Sanders as stage dad for his quarterback son, not wanting certain cities to draft his son, he's going to name those cities. This stuff won't happen quietly. It's going to be done publicly because this person isn't interested in doing business the way these entities have always done business. They've welcomed him into an opportunity at Colorado where he is making a great deal of money and making a great deal of money for others, doing it the way that he has. To give him two bargaining chips in the top five will allow him to shake the system on behalf of his kids. His kids wouldn't have the strength to do it on their own. And most dads wouldn't have the strength to do it or the money to do it on their own.
It would also be really good marketing for his brand because you'd have two marquee names up there showing this special relationship. And if you're familiar with his recruiting strategy, he does go for certain kids and he can slot into that almost father figure for a lot of these kids. But you don't often hear about Cormani McClain no longer being around practice over there. And I know Jason Whitlock has set out to interview plenty of players that he's just been giving the cold shoulder to that he ended up cutting. And their accounts of their interactions with Deion Sanders are certainly not as fatherly.
I mean, if I was a prospect, I would. I think it'd be reasonable also to wonder his commitment to Colorado past next year, right? When you're kind of talking about this and this is the end game, I'm going to try to get them where I want them in the NFL draft. If I'm going in, I'd be like, are you still going to be here after they're gone? Like, if this is your focus right now?
When you say the fatherly thing, that one is interesting because I'm sure he will be an exceptional father to you if you are exceptional. And I'm not even saying that about his blood. I'm saying about everyone else on his roster.
No doubt.
Because that's okay. But here, when you mention his recruiting strategy, Doug Gottlieb said of the video we're about to play here, he said, there is bullshit, and then there's this Picasso.
There's an article that came out that said, I don't go on visits. Okay. My approach, it's totally different than many coaches' approach. Sometimes I'm a businessman as well, so I try to save our university money every darn chance I get. So for me to go to, let's just say I'm going to Florida and I'm visiting whatever school, IMG. You don't think those coaches are going to be a little upset if I don't come by the school down the street? You don't think it's going to be pandemonium if I'm going to get naysayed if I don't go another 45 minutes? Then if I go to that one, then I go, I didn't come to that school. Now the coach is mad, so he's not going to let the kid come because he's mad because I chose that, go to that school over that school. See, other coaches, they could do that, but I can't. We target mostly guys that's in the portal. When do you make visits to portal guys' homes? Anybody do that? Do they do that? I don't do anybody. Have you guys heard of that? I think when a guy is in his 20s and he has one and two more shots, he don't give a darn about the picture. He don't give a darn about the parade that you want to take him on. He wants to know, okay, how are you going to use me? How can you help me get to the league? And what am I going to get paid?
One of the other things he said that we did not put in there is he was saying that these kids don't want me to come to their house and see how they live. When if someone had to come to my house, there were roaches and there were rats. These parents want to come to my house and see how I live. They want to be in my home. And It is a different.
How close is that home to campus? I'm just out of curiosity. Is it within 1.9 miles? Because if not.
Really,
you're gonna
write in a violation. You're gonna. Is it gonna be a greater violation than Greg Cody's journalistic crime earlier in the show, putting bowling names of Paul Radke in the bowling agate of the Miami Herald?
I don't want to side with Doug Gottlieb or Coach Prime in this, but he gives you insight into his approach, and he does say it's very different, and that is extremely different. Saving the school money was a really nice touch.
That was funny.
That was definitely done. I really enjoyed that, and the logic, like, oh, if I visit IMG but not another school, then you're going to have a problem with me, so I just don't visit any schools. Also, him just flatly telling you, we only prioritize the portal. I mean, there's red flags there, too. You got to kind of do both if you're building something.
You should be focusing on recruiting and the portal, right? Not just the portal, I would think.
Oh, but didn't they turn over like 53 players the first year? Like, look, man, this isn't about education there. They will get their applicants. They will get their students. Colorado will get what it is that it wants. It will get the students. But those ain't going to be the football players. Like, they will add to admissions a more diverse group of people because Deion Sanders is famous and because people want to see Deion Sanders' house, the place where he works and where he lives and where he tries to change what's happening in that sport, because he's doing it totally different from everybody else.
You could do that recruiting also.
But like, it's recruiting not just in the portal makes it more, it just makes it more cold, more business. You're right. You're right. But what he's telling you is just stop. It's the portal. I'm basically looking for the JUCOs. I'm doing this differently because I'm not trying to pretend that this is about education.
So I'm not trying to be here for 10 years.
Yeah, but you're also not trying to be there for these players. There are different coaches that handle this differently, but there has been a lot said about Deion's approach to making sure that these kids that he's taken a vested interest in land on their feet, go to good places, that it's still in the development in the best interest of the development of the young man. And his approach has been called into question by reputable people that know more about it than I do.
You guys are all correct when you say that he's obviously not going to be there very long. But I did tell you last week that 4 out of 5 coaches since 2019 are no longer at their schools. None of the coaches are going to be there that long. Like, 1 of 5 coaches has been in the job that he was in since 2019. That's 5 years ago. Like, all of this has changed. Like, it's all, we're in the middle of not understanding all of the change we're in the middle of, because that day's dead, man. The coach being there for 30 years, like, that's not probable in any way. 80% of restaurants close and 80% of coaches aren't at the same school that they were at in 2019.
But also, like, it does take time, but he was 4-8. Like, if you have another 4-8 and you're going to go, is Alabama calling?
He's going to take his top 5 picks and go change the NFL.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Don Lebatard.
Greg Cody of the Miami Herald, who is a source of constant frustration and entitlement and narcissism. This is what he says. This is either the last Back in My Day as a regular series or the first of a new phase in which Back in My Days are occasional, not every week. So he has just announced officially his laziness.
Stugatz.
I want to make him an occasional series.
I am once a week.
But no, I think more occasional. I think every time you don't have a back in my day, you can't do the show. I think
Okay, that's fine, because I have a contract, so if you want to pay me for not doing the show.
That's fine. We can pay him for doing nothing. We already do.
That's a good one. I got no retort for that.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugats.
They only signed 7 high school players. It's his recruiting class sat at 117 in the composite recruiting rankings. That doesn't count for the transfer portal, but in terms of high school class, he's also not good at it.
That would have
been a refreshing answer. He's like, that's not my strength. Strength, portal. So that's where my focus is right now. That's how we're going to get this thing fixed quickly. Again, I think you can do, as the top-end coaches in that sport have shown, and even some middling ones that have tried to improve their roster. You have to do both this day and age.
I want him to succeed. It was fun at the beginning of last season, but if you can't just neglect a big part of building a team.
If you're recruited by Deion Sanders, whether out of high school or in the portal, you know the turnover rate is such that you're either great or you're gone. Like, the middle level player, why would you go to Colorado when you know that unless you're great, he's going to flip the whole roster?
It was also kind of position that him going to IMG Academy, and there's just like he painted portal recruiting in such a positive light when you realize, like, how do you actually go about recruiting the portal? During the season, there's loads of tampering. Whoa. There's loads of tampering. Look what happened. Proctor, in his one act as a returning Iowa football player, got them in trouble because he revealed Iowa reached out to me while I was at Alabama. So there, and that I've heard from other coaches that, this is a part of it. Other opposing head coaches FaceTiming your players while they're in the locker room with you. The portal recruiting, especially if you hang your hat on that, that is particularly shady to me.
Well, you also need to outspend all the other schools, right? Like with some of these portal guys at Colorado, at a certain point, you're going to be tapped for resources.
He doesn't want to cost the university money, though.
I guess that's how
he's taking Ubers. Yeah.
I will say, just in year two, and it does take a while for it, but his recruiting's been disappointing. When you consider the primetime bravado. Taking visits and going to schools does mean something. Fortifying the relationships with these funnel systems, with these head coaches, especially like an IMG head coach where they specialize in just blue chippers. Fortifying those relationships by going to on-site visits. It's no different than any other salesman that occasionally will visit once a quarter with his top account. It's part of the game.
You say this, but I would say to you, given just what the last 30 years of Deion Sanders' life has been, do you think he wants to be doing that? I understand it's part of the job. I understand exactly what you're saying. He ain't doing that part of the job. He's not going to go and go to a bunch of cities he doesn't want to go to and a bunch of homes that he doesn't want to go to. Right.
But this is all data. Like, he's unlike any head coach that we've ever seen. And he was going to fast track. He essentially gets to skip the line. Like, no, I'm not going to take an assistant job. I'll be head man. The climb that I'll make is as a head man. So I'll be head coach at Jackson State. But I'm not going to be anybody else's assistant. This is all data. And if that's going to be his approach to recruiting, and so far the sample that we have is Ed Reed and Deion Sanders, they both have given you pause with high profile, whether it's that press conference clip or the losing season, or Ed Reed essentially getting fired before he could sign the paperwork, there are arguments against investing in someone to skip the line.
Video, can you get for me that sound and video of Ed Reed and what got him done because he was complaining about the facilities as soon as he got there? To my way of thinking, I know that when Deion was working at Jackson State, he's working on the lowest of resources. But I don't imagine that at this point in his life, Deion Sanders, if he's not doing charitable work, wants to be going to impoverished places for much of anything in his life.
That's the job.
Yeah, but also they're not all impoverished places.
But
it is the job.
No, but when he was talking in the parts of the clip that we did not play about roaches and rats, that's not something that Deion Sanders wants to be spending a Tuesday night doing.
All right, well, if you think the good messaging is you being above it, good luck with that, to the tune of the 110th recruiting class in the nation, because Nick Saban isn't above it. All these head football coaches that come helicoptering in quite literally into football fields across this nation on bye weeks so they can scratch off entire regions and meet with every possible head coach, because you never know when they have the five star. They may not have it this class, but they may have it in 6 years, and they're going to remember that time that I came to that school. If you're not going to care about it that way and you're going to hang your hat entirely on the portal, people can question the sustainability of what it is that you're building.
Absolutely. I'm just telling you that the way that Deion Sanders is going to choose to work this isn't the way that you and I imagine that it should be worked.
If it works out and he microwaves a dynasty by doing it that way, he would have carved out a whole new way of doing it. But all we got right now is a really disappointing season last year. For all the excitement, everybody got let down. He may have two top four picks, and that may be all the social currency that dude needs to keep it going. But you can start poking holes in this thing.
I think last season was relatively successful. From like, they became a national brand, short-lived as it was. Like, Colorado is a destination that people will want to go play for, and Deion Sanders,
really?
You can kind
They're 117th.
Okay.
It was successful because he made the money back that they're going to pay him. That's why it was successful.
Well, and they were coming off a one-win season the season before, and the season before that was a four-win season. So, like, they haven't had much success. They had national shows there. They got the attention. I mean, he has to keep going, though.
All that attention got seven kids, and all of seven kids to watch as impressionable teenagers, as high schoolers, and say, I want to go to Colorado. He only got seven kids for all that excitement, for how cool it looked on the McAfee show, for how great game day looked, for how amazing that first week one win at TCU was. He got seven kids to say, yeah, that's where I want to be.
If you're Deion Sanders, your best recruiting tool
fight through
is that you're Deion Sanders. If I'm Deion Sanders, why do I want to go to some small town into some kid's living room when they know who I am? I don't have to introduce myself.
You're right. You're right. This is a totally different way to look at it. I would say, what, you're too good for me? Deion Sanders doesn't want to come to my hometown?
Right.
Nick Saban came to my hometown.
Dabo Swinney was just here.
Yeah, Kirby Smart had supper with Peepaw.
It's cool to meet Deion Sanders if you get to meet him.
Yeah, that does get held against you. We have the data to suggest after 1 year, his approach when it comes to high schoolers ain't working.
Okay, that's fair. And yet his ego survives 4-8 and survives all the turnover. Which
could it survive another 4-8?
I'm not sure of Colorado.
100%.
Right.
His ego could survive anything,
right.
No doubt. But I don't. Could that program survive another? Last year, you want to call it a success. I won't push back on that. But can it survive a disappointing season? Because the whole brand is success.
They're not going to fire him.
Primetime's brand isn't about four-win seasons.
Right. And the other thing is, when his quarterback son leaves, is his interest in saying they're going to leave as well?
I hear the audience. I heard the audience. The audience was speaking to me in mass about 6 minutes ago, repeating something that they were saying the first month of the college football season, which is, Dan, stop talking about Deion. Move on to other subjects. I just heard. It's rare that I hear the audience all in one voice say the same thing.
In fairness, like, Colorado did win the first round of the NCAA tournament after Deion went there. So
very true. Sweet 16 run. Wow. Amazing out of them. That's fine. I would like to talk about Otani. There's plenty that we can talk about.
Well, I need updates. He's not going to talk until later in the day, and I've got other things that I wish to talk about, including, and I've been wanting to get to this since last week, the Marlins' desperate attempt to lure fans in the way that I would wish to be lured, which is give me $52 all you can eat. Now, unfortunately, I saw something in small print that bothered me that I've seen all over South Florida recently as I see these unaffordable condos flying up all over the place.
Contains gluten.
Starting at.
Okay.
$52.
I get it.
So the all you can eat isn't that you get all of those things. What's the list of things, Chris Cody, that you can get in the all you can eat Marlins buffet? The Marlins have tried for a very long time with an assortment of things. I feel like before long, we're going to end up at brothels and drugs. There's just going to be brothel and drug giveaways. But
at a baseball game, huh?
At the, brothel night. Brothel night. Yes. Do we still call them brothels? I don't even know if we still call them brothels.
It's very formal.
It does seem formal, but I do feel like the Marlins will do just about anything to get people to come to their games.
Except spend big on players.
That's right.
You can bring musical instruments as well.
That's right. Musical instruments, and what can you eat?
You can get hot dogs, chili dogs, nachos with cheese, nachos with chili, cheeseburgers, popcorn, peanuts, cookies, non-alcoholic beverages.
Oh, come on. I need my alcohol there.
Now, when they say starting at 52, because that includes your game ticket, so I assume that means that you can get a better seat.
It's dynamic pricing, I believe. Most of the time it's 52, but there are some presumably premier games that it'll be a little more expensive.
Okay. Don't you guys get spooked off by... Starting at?
Well, no, you look at the thing, it'll tell you the price. It's not like you go and it's like $52 and then they say, 71, please. It's like, no. Yeah, this is a 52 day.
If you come back for that third burger, they give you that evil eye. Come on. You know how that goes.
No, it's not. It's all you can eat.
Well, it's four items at a time up until the seventh inning, I believe.
That's the kicker. That's what we really got to dissect here. Now, if I'm in line, I walk through, let me get four things. Okay, let me get a soda, let me get a peanuts, let me get a burger, let me get some nachos. All right, here's my four things. I walk away. Can I just like hand that to my wife,
yes,
who bought a $20 ticket, and then I get right back in line?
Well,
and go
she
get
shouldn't.
My stuff?
She shouldn't be sitting next to you. If you're in the all you can eat section, you'd be sitting with someone else in the all you can eat section, unless you're breaking the rules. Now,
Marlins, if you think someone's going by, like a lot of single tickets being bought,
that's right.
I imagine.
That's right. I think that a lot of people are going to look, man. I've seen Roy leave restaurants with steaks in his pocket. Like Roy can't be trusted around free food and all you can eat. Roy, don't look at me like I'm saying something that's not the truth. In your shirt pocket, you would put an entire steak.
Yeah. Is that Never a ribeye in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me?
I'd say one of the benefits of this, though, is it's in the Legends or the Legends level. It used to be Lexus. I guess it's not anymore. It's in the Legends level, so it's not big crowds there in terms of concessions, so you won't have that much of a line to wait. And those tickets, like as I can recall, are usually like in the 30s anyway. So like for $20 more from a regular ticketed price, you get all you can eat food.
You mentioned $20 and dynamic ticket pricing, and it just reminds me of all the frustrations I run into trying to tap into that secondary market. Yeah. And all those frustrations went away the second I downloaded the Game Time app. Download the Game Time app and create an account and use the code Dan for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply, last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. That part is important because if you do find somehow, some way, a lower price out there, Game Time will match it plus.
Wow. You re-emphasize dynamic pricing. That reminds me, plenty of good seats still available if you want to see Nothing Personal with David Sampson starting next week.
Yeah, it's a really tough break for David. Just started announcing this tour on the right before UFL season kicks off.
Yeah.
We have a water cooler over here, and I could not tell you how many people were talking about the UFL.
DavidSampsonPodcast.com if you want to go and
get
tickets.
Is he struggling to sell tickets?
It's debatable.
Wait to see.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text SUNNY to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text SUNNY to 200-300. That's SUNNY to 200-300. SUNNY to 200-300.